Also, the Guardians won yesterday. I hope you all noticed that.
That's coming up about last night,
even though it was yesterday afternoon. Don't score all those runs in one day now.
I know. I did
blah,
see
blah, blah,
that.
Blah, 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 blah.
Well, we just have been struggling so mightily, and finally the
struggling
breakthrough.
Struggling to get the words out this morning.
Then finally, it comes through in massive fashion. An outpouring. That's a run differential game. You needed one of those.
She did. You got to help out the run differential. You watched finals yesterday. I'm sure you did.
Oh, yeah.
I think if the Cavs were healthy, they could beat both these teams. 216-474-0092. Can I blame injuries for the Cavs?
Well, that makes...
I'm serious. Your premise, I'm serious.
With your premise, that makes one of us. I do not think...
With my premise... You don't think they could have beat either of these teams if they were healthy?
No. I do not.
Really?
I do not.
I totally disagree.
Because I think what that discounts is the mental part of this, which I think even the coaching staff at the end of the year and even Kobe Altman said they don't have it. Now, he thinks they can get it. He thinks they can develop that
stuff. I'm not discounting the head. I'm saying they can beat these teams if they're healthy. There's definitely... Did I say they would have beat these teams if they were healthy?
That's what I thought you were saying.
That's what you said.
Damn it.
You're going to backtrack now all the way?
I'll backtrack.
He doesn't have to.
I'll backtrack a little bit. Can we blame this year's playoff failure on injury? 216-474-0092. I think they could beat these teams if they're healthy. They can. I think they could beat them in a series if they were healthy.
Well, I mean, I thought we would beat them.
Okay, so what changed?
I thought we would beat the Pacers. I did not think we'd beat the Thunder.
Okay, so you don't have any faith because they're soft, you're saying?
No, it's not just that. I mean, it's athleticism, it's length. I think they don't have those things. Maybe you could sell me on, you know, the Cavs... That internal development that everybody has to bank on now, because there's just not a lot of flexibility unless they start trading guys and moving guys around and, you know, staying below that second apron. But there's just something about, let's take the Pacers, for instance, who, by the way, I still think the Thunder are going to win the series, but now at least I'm thrilled we're going to get an actual series. I didn't know if that was going to be the case before yesterday. The Pacers just have this thing. And I've seen this rarely in the NBA. Normally it is, hey, the team with the most talent, the team with the best player, and the team that's been more dominant throughout the whole year, they just win these games. But the Pacers do something to get inside your head that don't allow you to look like the team you've been all year. I've seen it every series. It's not just the game-winning shots. Okay, that's amazing. You're never going to see that again in the history of basketball. You're never going to see a guy hit four game winners.
No.
In one playoff run.
No.
And there's still more games left. He might hit a fifth. You're never going to see that again. So we could chalk that up to luck, whatever, even though he's done it every series in Halliburton. But there is something where mentally those guys don't waver. And I know the Cavs didn't exactly have the cavalanches that we thought they did, as chronicled by they had the cavalanche set up and never got around to it. Thank you, Jason Lloyd, for...
Jason Lloyd 901 today.
Really doing investigative journalism.
Joining us at 901.
On that, Dan Gilbert going above and beyond to fund the Cavalanches that we never experienced. But even the big punches that the Cavs would throw at home, where that place would be so loud, it'd be deafening, the Pacers just calmly respond and then they get in your head. And I don't think the Cavs team right now, as of today, was ready for that. And then
I'm coping here. Because I said yesterday, I think that a lot of people just want to make trades because they want to punish the Cavs. Trades cannot be punitive. You can't do this. They are a flaw. But you know, I'm almost a man without a support system here when it comes to the Cavs. I said they're a talented but flawed team. I do 100% believe in my heart of hearts and watching basketball. And I know I don't know as many of the basketball coaches as you do. I do acquiesce to you on these things, all right? Damn it, I will. But I'm telling you, without a shadow of a doubt, in my eyes, everything, and I think a lot of people should agree with this, the Cavaliers are a more talented team than the Indiana Pacers.
Not Oklahoma. I wouldn't say Oklahoma City.
I can't say Oklahoma necessarily. That's why I'm saying we could beat these teams if we were healthy. Could. I shouldn't have said we would have. At the beginning of the segment, and I apologize about that. However, I think we could have. So now I'm blaming injury here. I'm blaming injury because I don't want to look at this where I'm seeing a talented team. I also said they were flawed. And then people get in and they go, what flaws do they have? I go, did you not see the flaws of what they have? Did you not see that? Because if you can't shoot threes that night, turn the faucet off. The game is over. Because you don't want to throw the ball to the block. And when you do throw the ball to the block, they just stop it themselves. Like when you have Evan Mobley, who's able to dominate, and they just decide we're not going to pass the ball to Evan Mobley anymore. And Jared Allen is Jared Allen in the postseason. I'm sorry, that's three straight years. But damn it, the talent is there. However, the trade names that you bring up, that most people bring up, are not trades that I want to make because I feel that this would be an overcorrection and would cost us in the long term. I'm very conservative when it comes to this. I don't want to upset the apple cart with some of these names out there, even though that some of the names that you compare them to are showing up and they're showing up great in the postseason. But you're not going to get those guys that are showing up great in the finals. You're going to get other light guys. And I can't guarantee that those guys are going to show up into the finals. So I look at it and I go, how can I make myself feel better? Well, Darius Garland did have toe surgery and he's going to be out for 4 to 5 months. And that means he's probably going to miss the beginning of the season. Then I have Evan Mobley who battled through an ankle injury.
That's not a big deal.
It is not an but when you have him hobbled, it is a big deal. It's a serious injury. So he was that injured that he needed surgery that he's going to be hobbled for the next 4 to 5 months.
Let me amend that. It shouldn't be a big deal if everybody's being honest about what
the beginning of the year. I'm not talking about next year. I'm saying about this year.
Yeah, but about the injury. I'm just saying there are instances where the turf toe can be something that you're dealing with the rest of your career. But from what people are saying in their reporting about it, it shouldn't be a big deal.
And the other names, like I'm getting pushback on, well, Ken, you got to be willing to make any move. Okay, what is the move? Well, Giannis is not realistic. It's just not. They're going to do everything they can to hold on to that guy. He lives it. He breathes it. And from is this even true? Is he still wanting to stay in Milwaukee?
Seems like it right now.
It's gotten very kumbaya here over the last week with the Bucks because he probably realizes where they're at and everything, and maybe he doesn't want to end up in some of the cities they've rumored him to be at, right? Is Kevin Durant a possibility? Well, I don't know. Who does he play for right now? The Phoenix Suns. Who's their owner? Who does their owner hate the most in the NBA? Our owner. So I don't know if they're going to do anything to do us any favors there. You're probably stuck. And the only thing you have left to do, and we do this very well, guys. This is a good Cleveland thing. We do spite and cynicism and sarcasm as well as any fan base out there. So you guys have 82 games next year to be spiteful and mean-spirited and challenge them the way that Donovan Mitchell said basically you should. He spoke through the media. I think he's very upset by the feelings of this team, by the attitude of this team. I think he knows in his heart of hearts, damn it, this is a team that should be approaching the finals, if not in the finals. And there's something missing. And I don't know if there's any moves that they can really make because of this damn second apron. So if there's no moves that they can really make that doesn't just feel like it's punishment because Jared Allen's soft, then they got to find a way to get tougher. Because you are right, like TJ McConnell, you watched him last night, he's a dog. Where's our dogs? I'm asking. I'm being serious.
Yeah, I'd like to see, you know, the question about, like, can you develop that over time? Are guys just always instantly like that when they come into the league? I think it could be a little bit of both, right? But you know, beyond that, we still have the issues about whether the two bigs work together, whether the two guards work together. None of those are questions during the regular season because they do. The regular season, when games are played differently, you're not scouted the same way. You're not settling in for what could be 2.5 weeks or 3 weeks of a series. It's just very different. Plus, the officiating's different, and that changes everything. It's, you know, Shane Gilgeous-Alexander last night, getting to the basket, not getting calls that he got all regular season. You know, how are you equipped to deal with that, you know, during the playoffs?
216-474-0092. Can I say that they could win this finals had they been not injured? Because when you put talent versus talent, I'll put talent of the Cavaliers up against just about anybody. But when I put them against Hart, I'm watching two teams that are just in a fist fight with each other. You name names. They're not very big household names, but they are all 100% respected by any audience that's watching these two teams play each other. Joe Flacco may be more like us than we had thought. At least on this show. At least with dudes of a certain age. Why did Joe Flacco get asked about the TikTok stuff? Why was that a question? Do we know why? Because he was asked about dances on TikTok and social media in general. And then this is what Joe Flacco had to say. Go ahead.
No TikTok dances. The fact that people, that is different too, this generation, the fact that people want to get on their phones and show people the most, like, that's embarrassing. You're an adult, like, be an adult. Like, it's just like, I can't wrap my head around that. And, like, I get it. Like, you have kids and, like, you want to, like, have fun with your kids. Like, well, like, have fun with your kids in private, you know? That's what I think. I'm not guarded. I don't think I'm guarded at all. I think, honestly, if you talk to me in person, I'll tell you a lot. I'll be pretty honest with you. But, like, yeah, on social media, no chance. Just part of me, there's a piece of me at times that, like, gosh, should I be this guy that kind of, like, does this a little bit? Like, because I feel like in order to have a good social media, you do want to be honest and, like, show what you do in your life. But it's just like, that's a job in itself.
They asked about the social media chatter during the off season, and then it gets to the TikTok stuff and the dances. I was wondering if it was because of the trend of telling guys goodnight. There was the video of Wyatt Teller getting on there and telling his buddies goodnight, which I guess is a trend that's going on, right? I don't understand any of this stuff. But they're telling everybody goodnight. So I would call Owen. Liz would videotape me calling. Mitch is obsessed with TikTok. He ain't sitting in here right now. I would call Owen, and Liz would videotape me calling Owen and telling him goodnight. And that is apparently a thing that is viral that people think is funny.
Yeah, I've seen some of these. They are pretty funny. Especially from manly men making these phone calls and whispering sweet
Teller
nothings.
Is a very manly man. Yeah. Are they whispering to each other goodnight? Are they saying
some of them have been
salaciously?
But it's so out of the blue, and that's what's making it funny. Because they try to make a little small talk at the end, and then they're like, why are you calling me? And I just want to say, I'm in bed right now, and
all right,
just have a good night.
Here's Mitch. Hello, Mitch.
Hello. What and just to give a clarification, Flacco and Picker were asked the questions about social media attention because Stefanski also talked about it being a potential, asked if he was a potential distraction for the offseason, especially with the younger QBs being in the building.
Well, they have, I mean, one of them has cameras following him around all the time.
Yes.
Now, I did see the video of Dylan Gabriel dancing with is that his wife, his girlfriend, or what is she? A significant other of some sort. I did see somebody sent me the video of Dylan Gabriel dancing because they asked me, because I always make jokes about an AFC quarterback does, the AFC North quarterback does this, that, and the other. And they sent me the video of Dylan Gabriel dancing with a significant other and says, does an AFC North quarterback do this? Which, he is a hell of a dancer, but I don't understand any of the TikTok trends or anything like that. See, I'm feeling older and older as the sentences go by.
It's also interesting, Shador Sanders, his presence on Twitter is pretty muted. Like, it's nothing that impressive for a rookie. But on Instagram, he's got like 3 million followers. So that's where he's making his money on social media.
On TikTok, he's got 885,000 followers.
Yeah.
He is how many?
885,000, which is nowhere near among the top TikTok pages.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought he might have more.
But again, Instagram is where he is huge.
Sure.
He is, right now, I wish I could tell you I know any of the... is he participating in any of the trends, Shador?
It's mainly a lot of, like, not that I've seen lately, it's more just... A lot of the stuff has been coming from the Browns social media pages, which people have pointed out their fifth round pick is getting a lot of social media attention.
They're social media people. They're paid to do that, right?
Well, right. They're looking at much in the same way that all content creators are noticing this. Like, we post something about Dylan Gabriel, it's getting a fraction of when we post something about Shador Sanders.
Yeah.
Shador Sanders has a national fan base that wants to get in on every conversation. That's just not the case for, certainly, Kenny Pickett is not getting that.
Well, I'm on Shadira's page right now. It's mainly a mix of paid sponsorships, in real life scenarios, workout videos. It's just a combination of those three currently.
Okay, so you guys got to understand something. You've heard every single sentence I've said here, and I've been more confused than the last one, right? So I'm going to be 39 at the end of the month. Unless my son is on one of these things, which by the time that he gets on any of these things, they probably won't even be around anymore, and he will be on something else, right? Unless my oldest is doing that, like, you're going to know I'm going through a midlife crisis. Because I don't know yet if I'm at the age of a midlife crisis. Joe Flacco seems he is in no midlife crisis, unless continuing to play football at 40 years old is a midlife crisis. Think about it. None of us are thinking about him actually finishing the season for the Cleveland Browns. Point that out for everybody. Am I at the age right now of midlife crisis? Don't all speak at once. I'm going to be 39. Am I approaching midlife crisis anytime soon?
Yeah, the crisis would be if you started out of nowhere doing the videos to look and feel young.
That's what I'm saying. If all of a sudden I start getting on the I'm not even on TikTok. If I start getting on Instagram doing videos that are outside of what I would do. Outside of what I would do. What would be those videos, Mitch, that you go, Kenny, what are you doing?
The biggest one, and this is kind of what Joe was talking
about. This is what Joe's...
The dancing videos. The dancing
just
in this...
Just dancing?
Just dancing. You have like the song playing on your phone, which allows you to like dance to the rhythm, and that's how people are able to make those videos. I've seen people in the city doing that, whether it be at Edgewater or like in downtown. And okay. It's a very interesting scenario to see from a third party perspective. Yes. Yeah, I would say so.
See, I've seen people making videos and I used to think it was really weird. And now I don't even bat an eye.
Have you seen it in the wild though? I don't see it at, I see it at like grocery stores.
I've seen younger people making the videos. And the first time I ever saw it was in the town square over in Poland, Ohio. And I go, what the hell is this woman doing? And then, honestly, it's happened so many times, I do not even bat an eye. I look over and I see somebody doing something different. I go, oh, they're making a video. And I move on. I don't think twice about it. But what I'm pointing out is that if I jump on any of these things, unless my son's in it, it's from his account or a family member's account or something, I feel I would be like in a midlife crisis at that point. Mm. At what juncture of my life have I ever been a part of that? I don't think I would.
I think Daryl, who's older than both of us.
Daryl is an old man.
Got into TikTok in the last few years.
What's he doing?
But he's not dancing.
No, he's not dancing.
What's he making?
Dancing Daryl.
He should be dancing.
What's he doing that apparently the Chinese government is looking into? What's he doing right now?
I think he's doing a lot of Browns coverage.
A lot of Browns coverage.
Fine. Yeah, that's part of his job.
Wait, did Nick Wilson get in on TikTok?
I know Nick watches it. I don't know. I think he was posting for a while there.
I'm pretty sure he had started creating videos.
I'm going to recuse myself of any commentary of that fine person making TikTok videos. I don't want to. I've already had one fight today with another host. I don't need to have another. Don't need to do that.
It's mainly just show videos that he's reposting, basically. Nick is.
Like when my wife is having a birthday coming up in the fall, and she wants to take a short trip for it because it's a more of a milestone birthday. And I says, well, great. Well, I'm not interested in any trips or anything, but can we get another dog for my birthday? I have found myself looking at Corvettes on Facebook Marketplace. I haven't dyed my hair. It is getting grayer as time goes on. Would that be a midlife crisis?
It would be definitely considered. I remember that.
You're going to have to call me out on this.
Yeah, I remember seeing the Corvettes come in to the golf course back in the day, but those guys were legends to me. I mean, I thought that was the most expensive car I'd ever seen or ever heard of when I was young.
I'm going to have to start wearing jorts and tucked-in shirts, and yes.
I think there's one thing I just saw on TikTok that may institute a midlife crisis more than the dancing.
Okay.
Yes, lip syncing videos. You ever seen those?
Oh yeah,
no.
Lip syncing. People will take the songs that I just mentioned that you can dance to, and they'll look at the camera and they'll actively mouth the words as if they're the ones who wrote and produced and sang this song.
Really?
It's almost hypnotizing in a haunting way to me, at least.
So it's karaoke, but you're not singing.
Yes, you can be singing, but you can take your voice out and leave the song in.
Boy, we're out of ideas in this country when it comes, or the world when it comes to social media.
Guitar with your face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you haven't seen any of the Live Done videos.
Yeah. You have to be young and attractive to do it, male or female.
I know who that is. All right, coming up at 8:22, Mary Kay Cavan going to join us on the show.
Don't say it like that.
That's why I said it like that. Kevin Stefanski spoke yesterday. I think it's time to take Kevin Stefanski's word for it, because Greg Newsom, he was, and I'm sure you guys have heard this on the station at some point over the last couple of days, he was just lavishing praise on Shedeur Sanders. There's other players that have talked about these quarterbacks. Kevin Stefanski says that he is not yet taking any consultations from any players on his quarterbacks.
I'm not there in terms of talking to other players about those type of decisions. I've leaned on players before for a variety of different things, but I'm not really there yet.
He also went a little bit further here when it comes to Shedeur Sanders. Now, this is quick. Listen to it, because some fans are in media. Well, why did Shedeur get to get reps here? Why did Shedeur get to get reps there? Why is Shedeur not getting first-team reps?
Let's not look too much into who's out there when. We're in installation phase. We're in teaching phase, so not much to look into.
How many teams have had to balance four quarterbacks at a single time in modern football?
Somebody pointed to
history.
The Giants doing something like this in the last 10 years.
I think some people can count on one hand. There was the famous Tom Brady. We all know that. You mentioned the Giants. Four real quarterbacks having a chance at any reps.
Yeah,
real serious
a shot.
Reps. Yes.
Everybody has four quarterbacks, but there's always one for sure, not even going to make the squad.
And then there's a guy who's basically standing around and talking to the punters and kickers and specialists and things like that. So you're on, like, counting it on one hand of how many teams have actually tried to do this. I think in this case, usually he is effusive is probably the right word for it. He doesn't give you much. I think, honestly, I think at this moment you could take his word for it. Kevin doesn't outright lie to anybody, but he definitely walks around answers and gives you nothing. He's very Belichickian in that sense. I think in this case, you got four different QBs here. You're trying to balance reps on these guys. You're trying to balance what these guys are going to be able to do. You're trying to balance the top-end wide receivers. I don't know how many you have. One. You're trying to balance the guys that are pretty decent at catching the ball with them versus the guys who are extra camp hands to be able to catch balls for others. I think that you can take Kevin Stefanski's word at it right now about what this depth chart is or isn't.
Yeah, the hope is, in contrast to what we played yesterday from John Middlecoff, who said, you know, this was all Jimmy Haslam.
Not my finest moment.
This is all Jimmy. Jimmy Haslam picked Shedeur Sanders. He made them take that guy, and then he's going to force it when they get off to a bad start, given the tough schedule to begin the season. Okay, the hope is that none of that is true. The hope is that you're having a competition, that it's a legitimate competition. A lot of teams have quarterback competitions, but they're not really legitimate. They can be tweaked. There can be an emphasis given to make one player look a little better. What you want is an honest quarterback competition. I will say, like, the Brian Hoyer, Johnny Manziel kind of was a fair competition, was it not? Like, they had a fair competition.
It was so fair, no one wanted to believe it was fair because the better quarterback won out.
The better quarterback won out. It was not the one that a lot of fans wanted. It was probably not one that the owner wanted at that time.
At least the people around him.
Yeah, but then Brian Hoyer started and, you know, got off to a good start. It was fleeting.
Well, look at, like, Russell Wilson in Seattle, right? They brought in Matt Flynn. They paid Matt
Flynn. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a great
example.
And
then they drafted Russell Wilson. And I think it was one of those where it's like, okay, we're going to do this. And Russ apparently, you know, he just killed it. He definitely showed that he was the better of the options and took it over. But those weren't as crowded of competitions, right? It's because we're still in the same time constraints as every other team in the NFL right now.
Yes, and Russell was
splitting it into quarters.
Yeah, I think I think it's very difficult. But again, I don't think that was a situation. And you just said this, that there weren't four quarterbacks there that legitimately had a shot for it. I don't think a lot of people thought that Russell Wilson legitimately had a shot at it at the very beginning. So you had to show something that was pretty exceptional to start the year. There's going to be, when you have four guys, there's always going to be a thought of, you got veterans on the team, you have one veteran quarterback, but he's up against Father Time. You have another veteran where maybe you want to kick the tires on it and see if you can get your own Sam Darnold or Geno Smith or something like that. Then you got these two rookies. So you have to try to give an equal evaluation. I thought for a while that, yeah, we call it a competition. This is no competition. I think in my heart, I would just put Joe Flacco out there. So is it a competition? No, but I have to be able to see something on any of these guys because I think that probably maybe one will get traded, but as of right now, I would probably see that all four quarterbacks would play at some point.
So you do think just, all four...
You're not going to carry four quarterbacks, but as of right now, would you not say that four quarterbacks, all four of these guys, have a shot at playing at some point this year? The meaningful snaps?
See, we've had five each of the last 2 years, have we not?
Yeah.
We started five
but
guys.
But some of those weren't meaningful snaps.
Sure.
Even Jeff
some
Driscoll...
Some of those guys weren't on the roster.
Even Jeff Driscoll at the end of the playoff season wasn't... That wasn't meaningful snaps. I'm talking like, hey... We want to see what you got, or we are trying to win a football game. Let's reverse that. We're trying to win a football game. Then it might get to we want to see what you got. Those are meaningful snaps. Shedeur Sanders or Dylan Gabriel at the end of the season, if you're out of it, those are still meaningful because you want to see whether or not you keep this guy, whether or not he replaces any decision you might make in the first round next year, which is pretty far-fetched as of right now, or you want to see if you want to keep either one of these guys as a backup moving forward. And that includes Kenny Pickett as well. So it's all meaningful. So you'd be shortchanging yourself not to try to do everything you can to balance this out.
So much can happen around the globe that we never hear of.
I really share in our fans' disappointment, frustration. Honestly, I'm embarrassed.
They've been through some tough battles, right? They know what the playoffs looks like. This team's been battle-tested in the playoffs.
He's a piece of crap. The kid, he sucked. He's sucked his whole career.
I got rumors about him. I couldn't please his wife, so now he's divorced.
Put a damn winning team on the field.
Now, the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima give their thoughts on what you might have missed about last night.
Last night, we had game three of the NBA Finals, which the Indiana Pacers took a 2-1 series lead by outscoring the Thunder 32-18 en route to a 116-107 victory. Now, Tyrese Haliburton in the game, 22 points, 9 rebounds, and 11 assists. And, you know, with the chatter of the Pacers being a more team-oriented system, Haliburton not having to score 40 points a night, some people taking notice of that, and Haliburton taking notice of those talks.
The commentary is always going to be what it is. You know, most of the time, the talking heads on the major platforms, I couldn't care less, honestly. Like, what do they really know about basketball? But I think as a group, you know, and watching film myself, seeing where I can get better is important. Experience is the best way that I can learn from it. So seeing where I could be better is important through the first two games, and just trying to be better today.
Haliburton's scoring average to the finals so far, 15.5 points per game, finals MVP levels.
I don't know if it's finals MVP levels for typical finals, yeah. But he was incredibly poised yesterday, and he was pushing, he knew when to take the shots. He looked a little confused, honestly, in the first two games. So he was a lot more aggressive, and they need that. They absolutely need that. Especially, there were long stretches in that fourth quarter without Pascal Siakam. So you're looking around going, who is going to make the big plays against this ferocious defense? And he was the guy to do it in connecting on those threes and also getting everybody involved.
He's also full of it. He absolutely cares what the talking heads say. It fuels him, and you're more than welcome to say that. But he probably wants to keep them saying such things, so it fuels him. Or he doesn't want it to put a red-hot spotlight on it that he gets fueled by. Because, boy, if you go out there and you have another great game, that's great. But if you have another... which he's capable of doing, 8-point performance out there.
I wouldn't be surprised.
You are going to get hammered.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if that's the next game. See, the weird thing about him and all his heroics, and now this push, Kenny, you were talking face of the league after game one, is that he's not good enough. So he's been spectacular at times, but he's really not good enough. Like, he could never go out there and do some of the things Donovan Mitchell does. You couldn't say, Tyrese, I need you to get 40 in this next game or we have no shot. Well, then you'd probably lose. He can't do that. He's just not good enough. He's good at other things, way better than guys like Donovan Mitchell, a lot of other things. But that's not it. So that's why it's hard for America to come to grips with him being face of the league, with him being a top 10 player.
Not even top 10 player, not even top 15. He wasn't even all NBA this season.
No.
Which is unbelievable. Yesterday, we had the Cleveland Guardians, speaking of unbelievable, breaking out the bats yesterday against the Cincinnati Reds. 11-2, a grand slam from Carlos Santana, a 3-run home run from Lane Thomas, giving a good feeling, according to manager Stephen Vogt.
Anytime you go out and score double-digit runs, it's a good feeling. And Logan threw the ball outstanding as well. I mean, it kind of gets lost in the shuffle when you're scoring that much, but Logan was outstanding today. So this is a big win. I mean, every win is big right before you get on a cross-country flight, and it's a good feeling to get on the plane.
Speaking of Santana and Thomas, I have been faked out two nights in a row on home runs that they have hit or non-home runs they have hit. Yesterday, Lane Thomas's home run on the TV channel looked like a foul ball. The one the night before on Carlos Santana, the final out in the 1-0 game, looked like a walk-off home run. Thoughts?
Still a little bit early in the season. camera guy's got to get it all together.
Well, I'm not blaming the camera guys for that. It's just more so the moment.
Well,
it's more so the moment where I'm like, oh.
Well, there's nothing else you can do about something like that then. Then that's just baseball. Well, I didn't think Carlos Santana's was questionable at all. I'm surprised to hear that from you.
We were talking about
your eyesight checked.
The differences in these ballparks, like in Yankee Stadium, every pop fly to right, the fans are getting up. They think it's a home run. So you, in turn, think it's a home run. And then when the announcer starts to raise their voice, you think it's a home run only to see, oh, it's a routine, shallow pop-up, didn't even make it to the warning track.
That's why you should be defensive of John Sterling throughout his career when he would accidentally get a pop fly that he thought was a home run because it was a short porch at both places that he was the play-by-play broadcaster of. Now, do I need to talk about the run bank, or are you going to bring that up here? Do you want me to bring up the run bank?
You can bring up the run bank.
Okay, so I did get asked a question from somebody on social media that they had an idea, and they kind of run past us. That the differential, because the Guardians won 11-2 yesterday, was going to help. Right now, the diff is minus 14. We are 14 under with runs. I look at the Tigers, for example. They're 80 plus 85. And he said there should be a run bank where you get to use runs that you're in the plus, but he doesn't know what it would cost. And I said, this is easy. Runs are so precious. I think you should be able to use one run for every 50 you're up. So right now the Tigers are able to use one run, and they would have credit for 35 runs towards the next one that they're able to use. The Chicago Cubs, they can use two runs because they are up 103 runs. So in any game, say you're tied, bottom of the ninth.
Oh, so you don't
you do not want to go to your bullpen. You gotta
see,
go. I'm using a run. Goodbye.
That's not a run bank, though.
Yeah, it is. Why would
you're
it be a bank?
You're not storing runs. You're getting run credits.
Okay. Well, we're not on the gold system anymore. So all it is
we're
numbers
on the run
anyway.
System. I got. Those
okay,
here.
Well, I got these numbers
see,
here,
I
so
think
here they
it
are.
Makes more sense to be able to use them. You have to earmark them before a game where, let's say, you're going up against the best pitcher in baseball.
That's good
I'm going to say, hey, I'm going to use one run today. So we start the game out up 1-0 and see how it changes the complexion of the game and the strategy.
Yeah, because that kills. You know what? I think Lime is actually right because it kills the momentum if it's like, all right, we're down by one going to the bottom of the ninth. I don't even want to mess with it. I'm going to use two runs. It's like, well, now people are going to go home mad.
Yeah, they
you don't
get
want
to see
that.
It.
But if Lima says, you know what? We're going to use one run.
Okay, but what happens when you're down 50 runs?
How did you acquire this run to use, though?
You scored 50 runs up. You're 50 plus up. So, again, the Mets are plus 94. They almost have two runs that they can use as credit
for
the future.
For yesterday's game for us, we're negative 14.
Well, that's why we have to start scoring some more damn runs.
I'm trying to preparate the game where we won by nine.
Is that what happens when you fall?
Is there an overdraft fee?
Now, hold on. What if you're down 50 runs? Can the other team grab a run? They say, you guys lose a run for the next game.
I have to figure something punitive for that. Give me some time. Go ahead, Mitch.
Well, I was going to say the last thing I had here was Nick Chubb talking about his Houston Texans press debut yesterday.
Boy, well,
you know, I was questioning why they wanted me, and then I came here and I saw a bunch of guys who like to work and not talk, and I realized that I'm a perfect fit, so I realized why they wanted me here, and I'm excited about it.
It's like two straight days we've had a Nick Chubb clip. I mean, will the guy stop talking? Seems like every day something's flying out
of his
mouth.
He's become one of the most talkative guys in the NFL.
Won't shut up.
Not the Nick Chubb I knew.
He's practically taking over for Arsenio Hall over there. Oh my God, he's just
what if we see a totally
over the place.
Different Nick Chubb this year where he's jawing with opponents, he's taking cheap shots.
If I ask
he's
this question,
getting in guy's face, he's stepping over him after he stiff arms him.
If I ask this question, am I going to get in trouble for even asking it from the fans?
Hard to say.
I was with a bunch of guys who like to work and not talk. He didn't mean nothing by that, did he? He didn't mean nothing by that.
You want to play it again, Mitch? Can you fire it back up?
Get it back up here.
Is that
see,
how it works?
See if I can find something.
Now
I
Mitch is living
that.
Through.
Here we go.
You know, I was questioning why they wanted me. And then I came here and I saw a bunch of guys who like to work and not talk. And I realized that I'm a perfect fit. So I realized why they wanted me here. And I'm excited about it.
Okay. He
I
was
don't
very
want to
careful.
Distort Nick's words.
He was careful. He didn't say, like, in a new capacity or, hey, it'll be nice to finally be with the team. He didn't say anything like that to denigrate.
Compared to my previous stuff.
But there is no doubt the entire defense did a dance, did about 50 Lord of the Dances every game, and they only won three games last year.
See, that's why, like, that's why I got to wonder, because you did play for a team that loves to talk. And Lima's right. I mean, they were Michael Flatley out there. Even in losses.
It's an encore again. Everybody back up.
Greg Newsom is planning a full production of West Side Story if he scores a defensive touchdown this year.
And then they'll post it to TikTok. That's it for about last night.
Wow, do you see what he did over there? Yeah.